The podcast you're about to listen to is part of the Professional Casual Network. To find more podcasts like this, please check out professionalcasual.com. The Professional Casual Network has gear. Check out teespring.com/store/professionalcasual for fresh new swag. A huge shout out to our sponsor, BeardedDragonGames.online. Pick up all your local game store goodness from Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, or WFRP 4th Edition, as well as terrain, paints, board games, comics, and more. Make sure to use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout for free domestic shipping or PCME10 for 10% off your total order at BeardedDragonGames.online. Also, a special thanks to Built Bar for sponsoring the show. To get 10% off your order and to help support the show, use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout or use the link in the show notes.
So, hey, stop me if you've heard this one. Me and my girlfriend were out in the country, and I said to her, "Hey, look, a flock of cows." She looks at me and she says, "It's a herd of cows." And I said, "Yeah, I've heard of them. There's a flock of them over there."
Should have stopped you. I'd heard that one.
Oh, no. Oh, you're the first one. Oh, no, Arachnia, it's over. All right, no more Arachnia. Your host D to the D, Dr. D, reaching out through the supervision-free source of, in this case, cyberpunk interfacing. I am joined today by my new and only partner in cyberpunking. His name's the Mac Attack. How's it going, brother?
How's it doing?
Here is my most recent guest, and we're going to get into it. But first, I got to do a little business first. We are sponsored by the people that that you've heard about. We're Professional Casual Network. Please go to our Patreon and sign up on the Digital Nomad tier if you'd like to support us. I am sponsored by Monument Hobbies. Love their paint. I don't eat it, but if you did, it's delicious. Baron of Dice makes some really cool dice, and if you want to buy dice from them, use the code Arachne at checkout to get yourself a swanky little discount. And we can never forget our sponsor, Mr. Laser, at mrlaser.square.site. The event's coming up. Dogfinity is going to be happening in Orlando, Florida in June 22nd. It is pretty confirmed I will be there, and it is in the EA headquarters building, so that's kind of cool. So if you want to go there, I'm not sure if the signups on that are still open, but if you can go, I would definitely recommend it, because who doesn't love doggies? I know I do, because I play lawman. All right, so Mac, how's it going, buddy?
Pretty great, although now I've been looking at the word Margaribaville for too long, and I want to know how this is a place I have to go.
So Ironweld is, you know what, Mac? You know, just so if you want to talk about it, Margaribaville is the Infinity event that is happening at Ironweld. Now, the Margariba is a unit in the game that is a giant, very similar to the Ghost in the Shell Tachycomas. It's like one of those giant like robots with the little wheels,
sort of like a walking tanky thingy.
Essentially, it's right. I think, yeah, it's easily the biggest model in the game.
I'm looking at the word for the first time, and my brain immediately, it starts dissecting Margaritaville and Reba McEntire, and I'm like, how is this place not in Tennessee?
It's not. Well, it's in it's in Massachusetts. It's crazy. Like, times are a changing. You know, people they just migrate around, and the ideas they just get around. You know, it's crazy. So, Mac, you are a pretty big head. You're pretty big in the Monster Fight Club. Is that true?
I'm one of our designers. I get to play all the fun stuff. I have the fun job.
Excellent. But before we get into that, what is your nerd origin story? How did you get started?
How far do we want to go back? I was born at a very early age. When I really knew I was a nerd, and this is a weird story, I grew up Southern Baptist, and I grew up in the middle of the Satanic Panic. So when I brought home Dungeons and Dragons books, my very Georgian grandmother, I was in California at the time, but my grandma's just an old Georgian woman, Southern Baptist, church 3 times a week. And I've got done, and she does not know what she starts talking to my pastor about it, trying to figure out what she's supposed to do. And he, to his credit, goes, "Well, let me see the books." So he read through the books and he goes, "This looks like fun. Let me run a game for the kids." So my first DM was my pastor, which is definitely not what most kids in the 90s got. I right from the beginning, I guess I was 10 or 11. I've been playing D&D every chance I get. And, you know, I'm just been a nerd ever since.
Did your pastor give you your book back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Everyone got their own copies eventually, but I got mine back real slow.
You're just the catalyst to spreading this idea. You're fine. Is that going to be a repeating theme with you?
Write scripture to learn a rule set.
So obviously, from young beginnings, you eventually got hired into Monster Fight Club. How did that happen?
Oh, well, I'd worked with their designer at the time was Justin Gibbs. He was a friend of mine and a coworker. We were the designers working on Malifaux Second Edition together. And
girl, what?
So he recommended me for the job, and John apparently liked the cut of my jib. So here I am.
Now, listen, I haven't really talked about it on this particular podcast in great detail. I played the living heck out of Second Edition Malifaux.
Oh, thank you.
Guild for life.
Me too. Oh, I had a very hard time making. The hardest thing was not letting myself balance tune Lady Justice.
Yeah, for sure.
Listen, to have someone else handle that.
I was mostly Perdita and McMorning. I just loved McMorning and Guild. He was so good. He's not in there anymore. It drives me crazy.
Did they move him? I love the idea of the Masters not. I love the idea of factions not staying consistent between editions or as the game continues. I think that's a real fun way to keep skirmish games in general real fluid and fun and engaging, because eventually the models you like are going to meet up and you get to do this cool thing and you get to, you know, and you're going to always have a meta game that's very fresh and changing and rolling so that nobody can really sit on top of it for too long.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting idea. I appreciate change. We talked about it a little bit in our narrative episode, like a couple episodes ago, where things that change how you play the game, I think, are usually good in a lot of ways because they force you to like use your brain differently. But now that you've mentioned that, so guys, sorry, Arachne's now a Malifaux podcast. No, but for real though, that's amazing. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. That wasn't expecting that. Please keep going.
Oh no, I think that was the answer.
So you and your buddy came from weird to here.
Well, okay. So career wise, I started off at. I started off with a podcast like you. I ran Dice Like Thunder and then The Dice Decide. We did 40K podcasting for a long, long time. Fantasy Flight Games was looking for someone to be a producer on the Warhammer 40K role-playing games. I knew the lore. I knew the systems. I had a bachelor's degree in game theory. I got hired. And then from there, I've just been making tabletop games ever since. Various companies, freelance. I've designed a few different role-playing games, a few different card games, just getting to work on a bunch of cool projects with a bunch of really cool people on some really nice teams.
That's
play
amazing.
Some real fun IPs.
That's incredible. I'm envious of you. That sounds really, really cool. That sounds like a cool life to live.
It is just such a great job to have. It is just every day I'm happy I have it.
So you start working at Monster Fight Club. Eventually, you guys get the IP, I'm assuming, of almost all of, I always mispronounce the name, Talasaurian?
So our Talasaurian is the company owned by Mike Pondsmith. Right. He's the granddaddy of cyberpunk. I personally think of him as the granddaddy, not of just the cyberpunk IP, but of the genre.
He's very influential, there's no doubt.
He's very influential, and he's so... You know what's really weird is seeing him at conventions. He doesn't know who he is. Like, he's walking around like a normal dude, not descending from a cloud or nothing. He and my boss, John, are old friends. They go way back. John is just one of these guys in the industry who, if you don't know him in the industry, you're going to have trouble, because it means you haven't gotten into the people, right? Like, he just knows everyone. And everyone knows him, and it's anytime I mention an IP, he's like, oh, yeah, I can call so-and-so and ask about that. It's like, oh, come on. He's just like this Rolodex for who owns and has all the emails. He's just amazing.
So, funnily enough, you say that. I bumped into Mike Pondsmith at a PAX Unplugged, I think 2 years ago. And it was right around the time Cyberpunk Red wasn't out yet, but they had the starter box for it. And The Witcher RPG had just come out maybe like a little while ago. I'm a huge Witcher fan. And his son, who was kind of, from what I understand,
I don't think Cody gets credit for how good a designer he is.
So I was just about to say, I think he was more in charge of the Witcher side of the company. And I absolutely loved the book.
I recently bought that book because I'm, you know, working on some miniature stuff.
Sure.
And I read it cover to cover in one sitting like a novel. I was just like, this is so good. Every page was beautiful. I was like, this is one of the best role-playing games I've ever read.
And like, the Witcher journal, so good if you are any even remotely interested in Witchers. It's so good.
No, Artel Saurian Games makes some of the best role-playing games out there. Monster Fight Club has been making their miniatures for the role-playing game for a while, and so now we're just making our own miniatures game using those miniatures. So all our minis are designed to be both for the role-playing and the miniatures crowd.
So everybody listening, that was completely unscripted. That was it. That's what you call a side tangent, and it was awesome. Was not expecting that. But yeah, if you ever have the chance to go to a Talasaurian booth at a convention, you get to meet Mike Pondsmith. He is the like most down-to-earth nice guy I've ever met. He's so cool.
He's funny too. I love he'll just turn to you out of nowhere. People will be talking about, you know, something they love about Cyberpunk, and he just stops and goes, I would like to remind everyone that Cyberpunk is a warning. It's not aspirational.
Oh, that's definitely sounds like something you would have said. All right. So
funny.
You're working at Monster Fight Club. At some point, the Cyberpunk combat zone idea comes up. You want to run us through that? Are you allowed to?
I was not at the company when it got started. This is John's baby. John, my boss, has been kicking this idea around in his head for years. I guess he's been playing with the color coding system for a long, long time. He and another friend of his were the original designers on it. I'm coming in almost as like the third hands on it. This is very much a team effort. I get to do all the fun parts, and then everyone else has to do the hard parts, like figuring out how the packaging is going to go and, you know, how many of something can go in a box. I get to just be like, where's the metagame? Oh, okay, that guy needs a buff. I'm going to write a cool rule for that guy. It's just kind of fallen to me at this point. I think I'm starting in on the second or third wave. I've worked on IPs like this a lot over the years, and so this is just kind of a real comfortable place for me to come in. I guess I found out at Gen Con this year that multiple people, like, I'm known for second editions. I'm known for like taking a product that could be one and carrying it. So it's like, oh, okay, great. Well, then that's what I wanted to do anyway. So let's do it. So John brought me in to just kind of keep this game going forever. We want to do eventually new editions, year, maybe more, you know, some revisions. But at the most, we want to just keep producing cool Cyberpunk stuff. There's so much in the universe to play with, that there's no way this game can just be, you know, 2-3 waves of stuff. We're going to be doing this bad boy for ever if I have anything to do with it.
Because you figure the amount of background lore, just even in just like supplement books for Cyberpunk, it's insane.
I could probably write 10 years of a miniatures game on Black Chrome or the Danger Gal dossier alone.
Yeah, for sure. Because I remember going through my store, and I saw the Black Chrome book, and I just picked it up. I started thumbing through it, and I was like, there is a lot of stuff in this book.
It's so dense, and it's written from that wonderful in-world perspective. So you're not just reading an item description. You're reading an advertisement.
Yeah, that's the best part, because they do that in Shadowrun, too, I think. There's like a couple where you pick it up, and it's like technically it's like supposed to be like a brochure. Like, it's like a Sears catalog.
Way back in the day, my friend had a Street Samurai catalog that was written that way. Cyberpunk's been doing it with their books for years. What's another one that did it is there was a superhero game that did a really good job of it. Masks. It's a Powered by Apocalypse RPG where you play teenage superheroes. And they wrote there, and like, it's all from that very, you know, teenage superhero perspective. It was done really well.
I got to say, these people that make some of these games, man, the inspiration, just absolutely stellar. I just love it.
Some beautiful, beautiful stuff out there.
So you mentioned it a little earlier, the React system. Now, obviously, the React system has, I'm not entirely sure there's a game quite like it. There's some influence, or maybe not influence, but there's definitely some similarities between Infinity's ARO system and then the React system, which was something that when I started playing Cyberpunk, I was immediately like, ooh, this makes sense to me. I could just kind of pick this right up because I feel like I've been doing this for forever.
It feels intuitive.
Right. So when that came around, you were saying that your boss, John, was the person that developed that.
John Kowaleski, he's my boss. He runs Monster Fight Club. He designed this, the reaction system, long, long time ago. He used to run Gale Force 9, but he's had this kind of in his, like, head for, I don't know. The origins of this are shaky at best. I'm getting them just, you know, kind of second hand, you know, stories over drinks and that sort of thing. So any of this from me should be taken with a nice, hefty snifter of salt. But basically, he and his friends have been bouncing around, and it basically attempts to solve all of the issues that appear in an alternating activation game. We like alternating activation, but it does create issues that don't exist in an I Go You Go game. Some issues are more exacerbated in I Go You Go, some of them are less, but skirmish games do have some things you want to sort out. For instance, how do you handle when someone can out-activate? Or how do you handle a horde versus a elite army, right? In a skirmish, in a I Go You Go, well, it's a part of your force. They're all going at the same time. But in a skirmish game, there's a lot of questions about activation order. What happens when you start losing models? What happens when one guy gets to activate a bunch of models together? The game starts to have all these questions you want to answer. And their solution was to create a system where both players are engaged during both players' turn. And the reaction system from that was, I like to say it's the, have you ever played War? When you're with cards, where you're slapping the cards down as fast as, but it's about getting the card down fastest.
For sure.
We're not quite there yet, but it's that level of engagement.
For sure.
There's no, you don't have to worry about your personal reaction time. This is a minis game, but there is, you know, you can't just wait for your opponent to be done. You know, you have to be watching what they're doing.
And I will, as a quick if anybody who hasn't played the game, as a quick way to describe it, every single character in the game will have a number of dice that are on the actual card itself. And as you play it, now there's not really turns per se in the game, but what happens is that as a model does something, you take the little tokens, whatever color dice it is, which we'll get to in a second, you flip it, and that tells you that you've used the dice to move, shoot, punch, yell at something.
I got one for you. I've got a 1 minute. I've timed it. I can explain our entire system in 1 minute, under 60 seconds.
It's funny because when I went to Adepticon, we're going to get this later, but at Adepticon, the guy at the booth said the exact same thing, and I didn't listen to him, so go ahead, shoot him.
Was it maybe me at the booth? Was it this?
It was not you. Oh. It was not you.
All right. The basics of the system. Every model's got a card. Every card's got some stuff on it. The first thing on the card is your action tokens. These are how many actions you can take when the model's turn comes up. On the other side are some skills. There's 6 skills in the game. Each of the skills has a basic action assigned to it, like ranged attacks. And every skill has a value. If you don't have that value, you've got a 0. Everybody can do everything. Everybody can shoot a gun. Everybody can stab. Everyone's got a gun. Everyone's got a knife. On your turn, you choose one model to activate, and you take its actions. You can take all of them. You can take none of them. It's up to you. You flip an action token over, and you take the action. Every action token has a color code. Green, yellow, red. Green is the best. Red is the worst. If you flip a green token over, you roll a d12. A red is a d8. A red is a D6, a yellow is in the middle at a D8. This means that as your dice get worse, as you take wounds, every time you take a wound, we're going to replace one of your tokens with a red. Models have yellow and green. They get red when they take wounds. Those wounds mean they crit more, but hit less. You don't become weaker as you take wounds. You become more erratic. The most dangerous guy on the table is the one in the gutter with 2 bullets in him and 1 in the gun. That's it. That's the engine. Everything's done from there on color-coded measurements. We have a 1-foot measuring device that's divided into red, yellow, and green. Items have range, red, yellow, and green. That's it. You're taking turns, moving models. Oh, when you need to refresh your models, you skip a turn. You say, I'm going to inspire my team. All your gonks go. Your gonks are your cannon fodder. They're there to die. They get to take a quick action. They typically won't do much, maybe do a wound, run up towards something, but they'll get to go. You refresh all your tokens on your characters, and there are no alternating turns. You just keep going until the game ends, and you get to choose when you refresh.
And so the funny thing with that system is when you first look at it, you're like, okay, I don't like how do you defend yourself, right? But then when you read the rules, you use the same dice that you would use for your actions. It doesn't have to be used or not. So if you use your higher defense, you're like, wow, I should always use my best defense, right? Because that means I'll get hurt less, right? Oh, but if you lose that roll, you become red. Now, all of a sudden, you like kind of fall down. You just fold like a piece of paper if you use your best defenses too quick.
Yeah, you definitely, if you've got a choice between red, you know, green and yellow, it can be a tough decision.
Because if you lose the yellow, you're like, okay, well, I lost my medium quality action, but I still have my green for, you know, when the boss comes up.
And a downshift from an 8 to a 6 doesn't feel as big as a 12 to a 6.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're literally halving that dice.
But
now, the crit.
Yeah, that's you're about to say it.
Now, the crit system is very interesting because a lot of times when you get crits, certain skills and abilities will kind of, like, proc. So, like, deadly. There's a lot of crit deadly is something that I consistently see, wherein if you roll the dice, the value of the dice is the high number on the dice. So on the 6, it's the 6, and on the 8, it's the 8, it's the 8, blah, blah, blah. And when you roll it, if you win the combat, you're going to get some kind of, like, extra effect or whatever. And most of the time, it's always good to roll a crit.
Yeah, because the ties always go to the defender. The only thing that beats a crit is another crit, regardless of values. So it's always good to roll a crit. And, you mentioned that the dice get smaller. When you are all red, we call that red-lined. And then when you take another wound, you die. Technically, you die when you risk a red die and fail, but most people don't do that until they have to.
Unless you're crazy.
Well, yeah. There are some weird situations. There are corner cases when you might want to do it, but they come up very rarely, maybe 1 in 20 games.
And if you're lucky enough to play this game 20 times, I'd say you're the real winner.
Right. Well, you know, our game plays in about 45 minutes to an hour, which is really nice, and it plays on a 22 inch by 30 inch board. Like, that's our tournament board. You play it in the same amount of area that you play Magic at the tournament level, which means you can do this weird thing in our game called sitting down. Now, you'll need a third party product called a chair. You might have one in your home. No, I know you're as a minis game, you're not used to that, but it exists.
Now, I will say, as someone who's played a lot of different model games and has written a lot of different articles. So I write blogs for Professional Casual. Anybody that knows me knows this. I recently started doing a campaign for Cyberpunk in my house, and it's incredible to me that I've been able to, 2 times in a row, the third one I've been taking a little longer to do because I keep forgetting to upload the pictures. I can play the game, clean up, or I can, let me rephrase that. I can set up, play, clean up, probably drink some kind of alcoholic beverage during the whole thing, and still have enough time in my night to write the article. The game plays super, super smooth. It's super quick. It's fantastic.
Some of my playtesters, like Lee or Alex, they're able to get a game done in, like, if you really wanted to, they could probably, if they really worked at it, they could probably get it done in under 20 minutes when they're trying to really, like, test something. It's insane how fast they're capable of playing.
So if somebody out there is looking for, so like, obviously people listen to this probably play Infinity can take some time, but if you're ever just like, I kind of want a game that's similar to Infinity, but I also want it to be like half the amount of time to play it, this is a very good product for you, which is one of the main reasons why I'm bringing it up on the show, because you get some of that flavor. It doesn't feel watered down per se, and it feels like a full game, and it definitely does not take as long as a full game of Infinity, and the rules are, I love Infinity, don't get me wrong, but sometimes the rules are a little clunky, or I won't say clunky, they're cumbersome at certain points. Definitely not the case with this.
I once did a study where I watched people play, and my goal was to determine, and what we did is we had about 5 of us, and we watched a couple of guys play. At the time, it was just a game of Warhammer 40K. I want to say it was 6th edition. It might have been late 5th, but I think it was early 6th edition. The edition really isn't what mattered. Is we started watching miniatures gamers play and timing how much time they spent on certain activities, looking up rules, rolling dice, that sort of thing, right? Like, how long does it take you to, how much of the time do you spend just rolling dice and resolving the die rolls? And it's been really interesting to see how different games have that. Like, War Machine has less time on a die roll resolution, but a little more time on rules lookup. A little more time on moving models and consideration, whereas a game like 40K, oddly enough, has less consideration time because you've got more time between turns. It's just a really interesting to watch how very different games come up very differently on these statistics, And when we watch our game, we've noticed that all of our numbers are lower, right? Moving's faster. Looking up rules. I mean, our rules are only like 20 pages of rules, 30. If you, the full rule book is 30 pages and it's, you know, got a lot of examples. So we've been, we work really hard to keep all those metrics down so that gameplay feels smooth and intuitive without actually impeding on the complexity or the tactical aspects of the game, right? Like we're not trying to make the game harder to understand. We're trying to get you to get to the tactics without having to sit there and figure out what's the word I'm looking for. We want you to figure out who to shoot. We don't want you to spend a bunch of time figuring out how to shoot.
That's a great way to put it, actually. So how do you think the general response to the game has been? Because it's been out for like about a year.
It's been at a Kickstarter, a little less than a year. It's been at a Kickstarter. We've been debuting it at shows. We were kind of the belle of the ball at Adeptcon, which was really nice. Everyone was coming by. We sold out wicked fast. And can you tell I've moved to Boston wicked fast? we sold out so fast and everyone wanted to come by and demo it. All the players who, you know, had already bought it. We had guys who were buying it, gluing it together and playing it in their hotel room that night and coming back the next day and be like, all right, I needed to upgrade this. My buddy got me with this and I know it's going to be a problem. What do I buy? And I'd be like, here's the Edge Runner, who is the answer to that. You know, here's the merc you need.
So when I went to the Adepticon 2 years ago, which is where I believe it was bigger, because I think Shatterpoint was also releasing that year. So that side of the booth hall was insane. Yeah, sure. It's just insane. There's a lot going on. And so I saw Cyberpunk. And I was like, I really love Cyberpunk, but there's no way anybody's going to play that with me at home. Everybody's playing these other games. But I kind of just put it in the back of my mind. Go back next year. Edge Runners.
Thank
you. Yeah, right. Edge Runners is now announced at this point. Still not out yet as of this time of recording. Now, I had watched the Edge Runners anime in between the two, and I didn't realize how much I needed Edge Runners in my life because it's still one of my favorite animes of all time.
That series it's so is good. Amazing. I will I mean, spoiler warnings and such, but I can't watch it without tearing up a little, and I've literally had to watch it maybe 20 times. I got to watch it at work and be paid. I was watching that thing on 5-10 times speed, just scanning for information, and I'd still get to the end and be like,
dude, come on, she's on the moon. Spoiler. Okay, I don't want to spoil it. If you have not had a chance to watch Cyberpunk Edge Runners, you're a fool. You need to go watch it now. Just turn this off. Turn off on the side of the road and watch it on your phone on the highway.
You're in for a treat. Be ready for some manly tears.
It's so good. Oh, the characterization and all that stuff, it's absolutely incredible. Some very memorable characters. And then when you watch that, you realize, like, wait a minute, I could take Rebecca and blast people in a model game? That sounds sick.
My boss made John had one of our sculptors, I think it was Constantine, I don't know for certain, but someone put together the Moment miniature. And if you're familiar with the show, you know the Moment, and it's it's Rebecca and it's Adam Smasher and it's a beautiful miniature, but everybody comes by and is like, really? You made a miniature? You made that miniature? Really?
It hurt me in my, it's a gut punch as you're walking by and you realize what you're looking at. You're like, wait a minute.
At PAX Unplugged, one guy came by and looked at it, and he just like literally, he was just like, no. And you could see like it immediately like triggered those tears from the show, and I'm like, I know, man, I'm sorry.
I'm just saying it's a perfect representation if you want to use Adam Smasher in the game. That's all I'm gonna say. It's a very good example.
He's tough in our system.
50 euro bucks for a monster.
I just made a change to him that I don't think people are gonna see coming. There's only an elite.
Okay, so there is no upgradable Adam. I was wondering, I was like, how does he get any better?
Yeah, he comes at 2
that
stars.
That makes sense.
So you can't just take him.
That's smart.
Like, right? Like, you can't, if you can bring him into tournaments, right? Because in tournaments, we have a street cred budget. You have a certain number of veteran stars to spend. Adam Smash would be viable there. In a one-off game, no problems there. Spend 2 of your veteran stars on him. But in a campaign, this allows the campaign controller to be like, whoa, 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 whoa. This guy's, We're trying to do escalation here. He works fine at 100, 150 points, but you cannot just bring Atom Smasher. Like,
and if you're familiar with the anime or the video game, because Atom Smasher is in the video game.
Or the video game.
Spoiler alert in that regard.
He's in the first, like... No, you don't meet him until you and you're
yes,
breaking in.
And you walk by him steal. When you're, like, hiding or something. I forget. Oh, no, you're, like... You're going there to steal the... Well, I don't want to spoil anything. Well, I mean, Cyberpunk 77 has been out for a while.
I think you can spoil the midpoint.
If the midpoint.
In Cyberpunk 2077, your character steals a thing and while hiding sees Atom Smasher. Spoiler, you sometimes steal.
Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought? So, very, very cool that now that the timeline, I guess if you want to call it that, of the game has advanced to the point of technically 1 year before the video game, but, you know, whatever.
I believe technically it happens nine months to a year. Sometime in 2076 is when Edge Runners
and
the show.
And to just assuage any fears, it has been brought to my attention.
Which I have
no idea. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Assuage any fears, if you buy into the game, now the original timeline of the game was placed in the time of the Red, which was Fourth Corporate War.
So most of Cyberpunk Red Combat Zone is the core game. That is our reaction system game. We are coming out with the Edge Runners box sets. Right now it's on pre-order. I think that'll be done by the time this airs. That's got a starter and a collector's edition. That's how you can get the game. That's one way to get the game. The Edge Runners is going to be a standalone box set when it eventually gets to stores. But it comes with our stand-ups, which are an acrylic standee that we found some beautiful ways to do them front and back. They look great. And it gets the board gamers into playing a full-fledged miniatures game because we can give you like 70 standees where we can't give you that many minis. I think the game comes with 25 standees in total. Yeah, we can give you way more standees. And that includes like six gonks. Like you're playing a full, you know, miniatures skirmish campaign just using standees. And then the collector's edition has all the models.
And if you buy that, the two teams in it are essentially Arasaka and then Main's gang, which also becomes David's gang.
The two teams are Arasaka's got Tanaka and Jimmy, and then the Arasaka starter that you've already seen before is already available. Those guys, we gave them a new card treatment so that they've got a card treatment to match, you know, the show and that sort of thing. I did tweak the language on a couple just to include some of the FAQ stuff to make them read a little clearer, but they're the team you're used to seeing.
And Arasaka.
Although I did
talk about Elite.
Oh,
I'm talk about an Elite gang. Yeah, they're nasty. Obviously, one of the things them too. And the one thing that I am very excited to see, what's going to happen eventually, obviously, I don't think we're not going to reveal anything crazy here. Militech's not in the game yet. I think it's going to be great to have like corporate warfare on the streets of Night City. I think it's going to be awesome. But eventually they got to be coming, so that's going to be, you know, something to look forward to.
My boss showed off a picture of some guys that look suspiciously Militech-y. I don't know what we've announced yet, but they're very suspiciously Militech looking, aren't they? The ones he showed off were the Maxtac looking guys, weren't they?
And there's some guys on bikes.
Well, we are working on. We got some guys on bikes. I'm in my playtest for vehicle rules. Right now, we're testing bikes and a car, keeping it, you know, getting the core engine nice and tuned. I think those have been well received, and we've been having a fun time with them. Next up, I'm going to test my flyer rules with the Heracles. Those are another, you know, try and keep our system real rules light. You're not dealing with 1,000 elevations, but at the same time, you're supposed to be a flyer. You're operating in a city. That should have some cool stuff to it.
And don't worry, guys, if you're playing Bozos, you do get clown cars.
Oh, yeah, I did do a clown car thing for there, so you can deploy out of it, yeah. Just all your dudes coming right out of this car.
Just a single car.
I think one of the motorcycles I was internally testing, and again, I don't know, you know, I test a lot of things that don't come out, so don't take this with a grain of salt, but I was testing a sidecar version, and if I recall correctly, the slot that you could put into the car to let it go Bozos is also available on the sidecar, so you could technically have a Bozos sidecar coming out of your motorcycle.
They're all hiding in the sidecar.
They're all hiding in a sidecar. I do not know how.
Just six guys just on top of each other. Oh, goodness me. I do love Insanity. So do you personally have a favorite gang? Is there one gang that we should play because it's clearly going to be overpowered because it's not balanced like the rest of them?
I try not to have a favorite gang. But if I'm being honest, when I first started, so I did not do the draft of the guys who exist now, right? That was other designers. So I got the benefit of coming in and playing these guys like a player. And I was immediately drawn to the Street King. I love his pose. I love that model. I had no idea what the zoners were about. So I started playing them. Now I've gotten good at the game. And now it's kind of like, well, I can't play zoners. I'm going to chain activate everyone to death. Like I'm maybe a little too, like, I'm having a hard time not nerfing zoners because I'm seeing my win rate. But I'm like, I'm the guy who gets to play this game the most. Of course I'm good. Like, I'm not going to be bad at this game. I need to tone this down. But now it's my new favorite is the Edge Runners with the full band. We just released the Firm and another box set of Edge Runners that I use them all together. I'm just using nothing but the Message, the Firm and the Message. I'm kind of running them together as an Edge Runners team, as a rocker boy band.
Yeah. I bet you, and again, I'm sitting here thinking, like, I wonder why Johnny Silverhand's not in the game yet. Oh, wait, he probably will be at some point. I can only imagine.
Well,
at some
point. We are the time of the red. So by definition, Johnny Silverhand is dead.
That's true.
Right? The time of the red starts because of him. So,
that's true.
You know.
Allegedly.
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 Listen, the new America government told me it was Arasaka, and I have no right to argue with them. They're the government, okay?
Right,
they would not lie to me.
Why would they lie? Why would our corporate masters lie?
No.
If you like Johnny Silverhand and that's the vibe you're going for, our
rocker
edge runner, iconoclast rocker boy,
yeah,
is very Silverhandy, but he's obviously not Silverhand. He's got a jaw thing going. He's got the two cyber limbs, but he's got the one arm and a one hand. So he definitely evokes that kind of rocker boy energy.
Oh my gosh, are you telling me that at some point, maybe, who knows, right? Who knows in the future? I'm just speculating. I'm wishlisting. The ability to have Ted from Bill and Ted, the ability to paint Ted on my miniatures table.
Well, I mean, you can do that with any miniature. If you can't paint Ted on a 40K model, are we even playing the same hobby?
That's true. That's fair. You're right. I wasn't thinking straight. I'm sorry. You know, I'm glad you're here to set me straight. Set the record
straight.
Right?
I mean, all you gotta do is plaid the legs from the hips to the knees. There you covered his, his flannel. I mean, I could easily do a Ted Theodore Logan Space Marine. And you got your chapter ready to go. They're the Space Stallions, right?
Yeah.
In front of their name.
Yeah, Wild Space Stallions.
I think I've just inspired next year's Adepticon doubles tournament winner.
It's an Arachne exclusive, ladies and gentlemen. Arachnids, get ready.
Man, now that makes me want... For the... Man, I love that doubles tournament.
Yeah, if you could, oh my gosh, could you and your partner could come dress as Bill and Ted? Oh my gosh.
And then you could come in costume?
Yeah, that's amazing.
See?
People are listening to this episode.
Don't waste that on the doubles tournament. Come to my tournament and do that.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Why am I helping them out? Be cool at our place. Where all the cool kids are. You don't want to be uncool, do you?
I mean, I know the owners of Adepticon. They're really cool. Hank and Tizzy, they're great. They need all the
help. They just announced their move, didn't they?
They did, yes. They are now in Milwaukee. We'll more than likely have them on the show to talk about that.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Milwaukee's got some great places to eat. Not that I don't like Schaumburg. I went to college there, so it's, you know, my old stomping grounds. But I like Milwaukee a lot. It's a nice city.
I've yet to be there. Honestly, it was the first time I'd ever gone to the Chicagoland area. And actually, I'm going this weekend, funnily enough. Complete and total side tangent. But I'm going there again for hopefully my last bit of deep dish pizza from the actual tech. Because, like, I don't know. I don't have a lot of chances to go to Chicago regularly.
Do you have a favorite deep dish place?
No.
Okay. Well, the one everyone's going to recommend to you is Luminetti's. It's pretty solid. It's pretty much your basic definition of your high quality Chicago style pizza. So
okay, so listen, that's just in Arachnids. Your pizza.
Every Chicagoan will tell you, just go to Luminetti's. They don't want to risk you going somewhere else.
And if you say the word Arachne to them, you'll get nothing but confused stares. So I think that's worth it.
It's like a B plus, A minus, pi. They're like, just go there.
And also, if you go there, give us a 5-star review in the bathroom stall. Just write it in like permanent marker on the back of the stall. Just be like, hey, listen to Arachne. What can I say? So
guerrilla marketing 101.
So guerrilla marketing. So as an actual game designer, I wouldn't say in charge of the game, but pretty much in a very influential
position. Definitely
not position.
In charge.
Yeah.
I am John's rules monkey.
So as the proverbial professional rules monkey, what have you learned from the beginning of the game till now? Because I've even seen some of the rules not completely evolve, but there's definitely been some like tinkering that's happened where certain things have changed. What have you learned about the game since the game has come out until only now? And it hasn't even been a full year.
A lot of what I'm learning in my spot about are what dials tune my game best, right? Like some dials, you click them one notch over and it makes a bigger swing than others. So you got to find where your dials are. You got to find out where your tuning knobs are. But I have developed, my philosophy has definitely developed over time. When I first started, I had it in my head that maybe I didn't want gear card on cards anymore. And I designed a lot of characters that had double abilities or a single good ability. But as I've been with the game more and more and played it more and more, the more I've realized that the equipment that comes with the characters is just as defining. And so a little bit more of that has come back into the guys I'm developing and designing. But also learning where the balance needs the adjustments. This is our first edition. We tested. We love the game. We tried our best. But even the best game designer can't do a perfectly balanced game on a first edition when we simply don't have the player base, right? Like even a video game can have a million playthroughs. You know, if you're lucky, you work for a company like Blizzard or CD Projekt Red, where you can put out a weekend play test and get a million hours of play, right? You just get so many systems and so many eyes and so many different people. You learn so much. But with a miniatures game, the real thing we can look for is, were you able to understand the rules when I gave them to you? Were they fun? Did anything really break the fun? Was anything so outlandish that you have to tell me? By now, I've gotten to see thousands of games played. So we finally get to see where some of the power imbalances are lying. So we're getting to start, you know, getting to address that and move our metagame forward and make some shifts. Another big shift coming is, for instance, how we handle rarity. Right now, rarity in the game, so gear card have rarity, and the rarity right now determines how many you're allowed to bring. Heavy pistol is rarity 2. Your crew can purchase 2 heavy pistols. You also have street cred. That determines what you're allowed to choose. Rarity is how many you can choose. We are hopefully, and testing has looked good. Expect to see it more and more. Start running campaigns and putting it into campaign rules where instead of this determining how many you can have, rarity instead determines how many you can draft. And instead of your HQ during in a campaign, you have your HQ, which is the cards you can choose from when you hire. And instead of getting all of the cards available to your street cred every time you level up, instead, every time you play a game, win or lose, you're going to add cards to your HQ. And you can add 1 rarity 1 card or 2 rarity 2 cards or 3, you know, you can add a number of cards to your HQ based on their rarity. So it's not how many can I bring, it's how many can I add to my list. That way the tournament players are just free to take the gear they want and to not really have to worry about the overall rarity or cost of it. Or not rare, the overall rarity of it. You can bring 10 heavy pistols if you want. It's cyberpunk, everyone can be strapping.
So that's a pretty good idea.
I also want gear to become a little more, right now gear is important, but it's not as vital as a synergy between the characters. I think character synergy, especially within a faction, is really critical. But I think for the game's balance, it'd be fun to start getting some gear synergies. So it's about what faction synergy you're playing, what model synergies you've got going, what do they do, and then what did you equip them with? Does it shore up one of their failings and they have a series of gear that lets them do things that they usually aren't good at? Achieve goals they're usually bad at, or do you double down on their ability, right? Where are you putting your gear? I think right now, players, at least watching them, looking at list after list after list, players are taking about, on average, 10% of their army of their team in gear. I'd like to see that number stay at about 10, maybe edge up towards 13, 15 for some armies, but maybe gear needs to be a little cheaper going forward, be a little, you know, maybe an assault rifle should be easier to get, you know, but that's stuff that I have to watch for the next 2 years of data. I'll know if bigger swings like that need to start dealing with that.
Yeah, that's good that you're paying attention to that, though, because I could definitely feel some restrictions on, like you were saying, a heavy pistol is a good example, because I found myself bringing both of them very quickly just because of the advantages of it with being able to shoot within short range thing.
And the deadly crits, a guy who, you know, gets wounded still has a chance of doing something strong.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, there you go. Well, there you go. If you're listening to this, know that the person that is in that's helping with the rules is definitely paying attention to that kind of stuff.
Very much. The engine itself, we're learning a lot about it because it hasn't. John did a lot of testing. It's a beautiful engine. Every review we get, it really hums. It's very clean. People are intuitively grasping it after their first game. So that's wonderful. But at the same time, we're learning a lot. You know, no matter how well engineered a car is, you learn a lot about it once you turn that engine for the first time and hand it to a driver that isn't you.
For sure. So what would you say is next? What do you think is the next thing you want to look at in terms of like game design for the game itself?
Well, right now, a big deal about it, I'm working on vehicles. We're working on redoing equipment. I'm bringing in the Universal Equipment Deck, which is just a ton of equipment so that people have a lot more options. More models. I'd like us to maybe even have, I think I'd like to see some new factions. I think right now we're bouncing around. Of course, I think everyone would like to see Militech. So that's really high up I get to be way in advance. I know some stuff that is coming.
For sure.
You ask me what I want to do next. And I'm thinking like, oh yeah, 2 years from now. Yeah. Cause like the stuff that I've done, you know, that I just finished is already being printed and manufactured. Right. Like I just finished my work on Edge, you know, that I need to do on Edge Runners. I'm working on stuff I need to do for Borderlands and, you know, our other games. But the next thing I would like to start working on for Cyberpunk is probably your Militechs or your Nomads, start playing with our vehicle rules more, really getting them some good, robust testing. That way, when we start seeing a faction that frankly uses a lot of drivers, right? That is the defining thing of the guys like Nomads, that our game is ready to introduce Nomads in a way that isn't just, these are the guys who you've seen. It's more like, these are the guys who bring vehicles. These are doing unique, fun things with vehicles. If you like painting cars, play Nomads. But at the same time, they're not overpowering, right? Like, rocket launchers deal with cars pretty effectively. Guys on motorcycles are not protected from machine guns.
It's a darn shame. You know, I say that all the time. As I'm walking by, like somebody goes by on a motorcycle, I'm like, I bet if somebody shot a machine gun on him, they'd hit him real easily.
I just realized... It's funny. I just realized I missed the reaction system, the explanation in the reaction system.
Yeah, we didn't actually go over it. Yeah, let me. You know what?
Let's. Why it's called the reaction?
Quick aside. If you don't know, if you take a wound, you can use one of your actions that you haven't already used to interrupt them. There. That's what the reaction system.
That's what, and that actually solves one of the problems in skirmish games, in alternate activation games. Sometimes one of your expensive models doesn't ever get to do anything because everyone attacks him and he dies. Right. And you had to prioritize his activation later. He just took too many wounds. Now in our game, every time you take a wound, he gets to act. So your opponent doesn't take your wounds away or your actions away. They force you to use them at a time you don't want. They might downgrade them a little, but you always get to act with your cool dudes. At least some. They get some chance at achieving their goals.
Which is super cool because the influence action can be done as that. And you can even take the turn away from them.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. That's one of the ones we've been talking about changing.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, I got to say, I'm excited to see what you do.
Well, if you're on our Discord, you've seen us chatting about, you might have seen us chat about it in the beta test. I've got a lot of our testers kind of giving it a try where instead of you activating the next model with the command action, because I feel like that's too much chain activation in the game. Alternating activation can have some chain activation, but you don't want too much. Then the game becomes I go, you go. So instead of it, the basic action being allowing you to chain, instead we're thinking it'll give you a free action. So you're moving your action to that guy, but maybe that action is the same color as the person who gave the order. So you're giving that guy your green, so that guy who's wounded can take a green. That one I'm not, I have to, that's where we got to do the math, is it going to be of the same color or not? And do we want to make the change? But we are testing that right now.
There you go. The game is evolving in front of our very eyes. In front of our very eyes. So I've seen some pictures on the Discord, and I got to say, at some point, we keep talking about it, there must be some kind of vehicle rules, Kickstarter-y type thing that might be coming out at some point from Monster Fight Club.
That does sound like us, and I think I've heard people at the office talking about stuff like that, but I could not in confidence give a date, and anything I say would be so prone to change, you might as well ignore it. I do believe it is our intention to make some... John's got some announcements he wants to tell, show off that Heracles in some real good detail. He's shown it at a lot of conventions. Like, people have seen it. It's a beautiful model. But I don't want to steal any of his thunder.
We'd hate to take that from the big man, the big Zeus upstairs.
Right? You don't want to. He gets so few joys in life. He owns a gaming company. He has to spend most of his time, like, dealing with business stuff. That sucks.
And of course, the Witcher RPG, or not RPG, the Witcher miniatures game was announced not too long ago. That one is coming to Kickstarter. I don't know if that one's actually kickstarted yet.
That, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We still got to write that one. We just hired John Goodenough. If you're familiar with Goody, as you know in the industry, John Goodenough is an amazing designer. He's been doing it for years. He's just so good at it. Love the guy. He's just a swell guy too. Real fun dude. He and I have not gotten a chance to crack into the deep of it, but we've been testing some with some of our internal testers. We are working first on, I think we're calling it Reaction Fantasy, just internally, to get the actual core engine of fantasy done so that it feels like a fantasy skirmish game. There's more, you know, Cyberpunk is more about shooting. Obviously, a skirmish game is more about melee. How do we get the magic worked into that feeling right? Does it feel like, you know, the fantasy game like a fast play kind of D&D skirmish, right? We want that kind of, I don't know what to call it, small unit tactics feel to it. That way, when you start adding in characters like Geralt and Yennefer or Dandelion, suddenly, you know, or even guys like Letho over on the other side, or some of the Blue Stripes, for instance, when you start bringing them in, you don't want them to feel like the baseline fighter. You want them to feel like this different group. They are unique to the setting. Here is a standard soldier you might see in every rank and file army. Here's the Blue Stripes, you know. Here's a standard. Here's your dwarven vampire hunters, drake hunters, right? The guy's going out, and here's a witcher. Like, these guys are different dragon hunters, you know. Like, so we've started the internal process. We're probably going to do a public playtest for that one too. I should say real soon. I've been saying real soon for too long, and then, you know, schedule keeps pushing stuff back. But we're really excited for it. We've got an internal playtest, and Witcher is going to be great, I think. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Soon TM, I believe. Is
Soon TM. Yeah. But if you're excited about it, don't hold off. We're going to be using the same models. The playtest will be live shortly. And you're going to rapidly know if you're going to love this game as much as we do.
So I am going to play Nilfgaard because I'm a psychopath. And I want to be known as Dr. D, the man who dances upon the graves of his enemies and all that stuff. So...
sure.
Hey, Black's in season, baby.
I mean, you can't go wrong with Nilfgaard. Plus, they got good wizards.
They sure do. And they got Letho, sort of.
The Kingslayers, while he certainly will work quite frequently with Nilfgaard, let's not subscribe to that man any level of loyalty based on national, you know, any of that.
Listen. He went to Syntra and he perfectly legally married the princess, and they own Syntra.
No one is arguing. Yeah,
non-negotiable.
No,
okay.
Everyone saw that and went, "Oh yeah, no, totally."
No.
Yeah, this is fine. Yeah,
this is good.
Entire countries didn't have to shift their existence on that one thing. No, it's fine.
Yeah. It's fine. Oh, yeah, yeah. Perfectly almost agreeable UN kind of interaction. Came really in, everything was the on the up and up.
Don't know why they wrote a whole fantasy novel about it.
I mean, it's mostly just boring bureaucracy. You know, yeah, it's just red tape. Just don't worry about it. Don't look into it too deep. It's not that big a deal. But I'm just saying, the ability to play Queen Meave, holding on, oh my gosh, like that first Nilfgaard thing. Mm.
We want to use a very similar system. The joke I've been going with is, finally, we get to find out who wins in a fight, Adam Smasher or Yennefer with a chain gun.
It's classic matchup. Classic matchup.
The answer to that, of course, is Kirk, because anytime you match up two people, Kirk's the winner.
So, as a very quick aside and very brief tangent, Knight Models just recently announced their Game of Thrones game, which follows the almost exact same rules as their Batman game, which will answer the age-old question, who has more preparation? Is it Batman or is it the Night King?
The Night King's had more prep time. Has he used it like Batman?
Has he used it wisely, though? That's the question.
Which we will now try to solve for the next 3 hours. Like I'm on VR. Join us next week.
All right. Well, I got to say, it's been an absolute blast to have you on, my man. Thank you for talking Cyberpunk with me. It's been a real privilege.
Thank you for having me. We're going to get a game in next week, right?
We are. So if you are in the Massachusetts area, expect some Cyberpunk chaos headed up by Dr. D and one of the head creators of the game itself. You can't get more awesome than that.
I am our rules monkey. I'm going to try and get that on a business card.
If you manage to get him drunk enough, Lord knows what he's going to say. Free drinks for life.
I'll get in trouble. I'm sure about it.
Well, you know what? Until that happens, we'll talk to you then, buddy.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So, guys, if you're listening to this, make sure you give us a 5-star review if you can. Go to that restaurant that he was talking about earlier for the pizza. Go into the stall. Write 5-star reviews for Arachne on the bathroom stalls. Or you could give us a review on any podcast catcher of your choice. Apple, Google, Spotify, whatever. 5 stars. And if you can, put words in it, because for some reason the algorithm likes words. And so when you do that, it helps us reach out and get more people for really cool interviews like this. And yeah, I absolutely love you guys. And I really hope you guys are enjoying weird little content like this, little side things like this. Because I do believe that this game really is very good for Infinity players as a good type of side game that can squish your brain and kind of wring out the more complicated stuff you might have to deal with on the regular Infinity competitive circuit. And hey, that's why I'm here. I'm here to help you out. I'm here to serve. I'm here to serve. My name's Dr. D. That's dr.d. You can find me on Discord at Dr. D, which is dr.d, or you can email me at gmail or furypainting@gmail.com. If they want to talk to you, buddy, how do they get in touch with you?
Our Discord is the best way. Come join our Discord. We love having you, and we love having more testers and just gamers to geek out with.
We'd also like to thank all the people in the background that keep this amazing podcast running every single time. Kara does all the editing. We absolutely appreciate everything that she does, and Tim runs the network. He's okay, I guess. You know, whatever. I'm going to see him this weekend. I'm going to punch him in the face. So, thanks for listening, denizens of Night City. Make sure you keep it popping out there and don't let the scavs get you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the other great shows here at the Professional Casual Network. Like what, Danny?
I'll tell you. On Mondays, we've got the Lost Omens podcast, our Pathfinder 2e actual play, hosted by me, playing through the Extinction Curse AP. Also, streaming on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, you can check out, the Power Phase, our Marvel Crisis Protocol live battle report show. On Tuesdays, the podcast version of Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog is available. On Wednesdays, alternating releases on the Patreon, we have Settling the Southlands, our homebrew Wolfthorpe actual play, and The Slithering, a Pathfinder 2nd edition actual play. and on Thursdays, live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork. We've got Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog.
You can also check out back episodes of Elite Eight Showdown and the first 39 episodes of The Lost Omens podcast, the first 24 episodes of Settling the Southlands, and the first handful of episodes of The Slithering on the YouTube at youtube.com/theprofessionalcasual.